This programme was made with the support of Sound and Vision, Broadcasting Funding Scheme, a BCI initiative.
Well, if you envisage Dublin inner city, just north of Liffey, which would be around Gardiner Street, Summerhill, there's a block between Gardiner Street, Summerhill, and in that area alone, three very important clubs were founded. Belvedere Newsboys Club, as it was called from its foundation. One of the early Bruinne, which is Brew Wirra from North Great George Street. St. Francis Xavier Boys Club, to cater for boys. The emphasis was on boys at that time because boys were always deemed to be the ones in most need. Those three clubs were within striking distance of the Pro-Cathedral.
Dublin's inner city in the 1930s and 1940s. Unemployment, poverty, social deprivation. But there were happy times for thousands of young boys. With little or no recreational outlets, many boys joined the local boys' club. These clubs were to be found in many areas of inner city Dublin, providing entertainment, recreation, education and an opportunity for self-development and in most cases to foster lifelong friendships. In this four-part programme, we'll chart the history of those forgotten moments of Dublin, a Dublin that has now been taken over by office blocks and apartment schemes. We'll talk to some of the boys and listen to their stories about those lifelong friendships, the impact that the clubs had on them and their families. We'll chart the rise and fall of the boys' club through the stories from the boys who became men. How the boys' club concept grew into the youth clubs of today as their families moved into the new Dublin suburbs, which had developed throughout the 1950s and 1960s. The clubs were not just institutions, nor were they simply buildings. At the heart of the clubs were the boys. I grew up listening to stories with the boys' club from my father. I remember as a child our living room being full of tin cans for Flag Day or the annual carol singing at Christmas. My dad, Joe O'Connor, grew up in Sherard Street, just off Dorset Street, and was a member of the St. Francis Xavier Boys. He went on to become a leader with the club and well-respected youth leader throughout the North Inner City. Moving to Beaumont in the 1970s, he went on to found the Ardmore Montrose Youth Club and has passed on his experience to his four sons, who have all become volunteers in some aspect of youth work. We spoke in studio about the early days of the boys' club in the North Inner City.
Now, the reasoning for these clubs being formed in the first hand, as you will find it later in, as the programme develops, you'll particularly hear a very telling story about the boys who became members of the Belvedere Newsboys Club. Because in the late 20s, particularly 30s and 40s, the Belvedere Newsboys Clubs were solely formed for the benefit of the newsboys. And inner city Dublin at the time was quite a different city as we have now at the moment. At the moment we have office blocks, apartment blocks. In those days, in the 20s, 30s and particularly the 40s, and 30s and 40s, it was tenement buildings. And families were rearing their families in maybe two rooms, one room. And different people in different, with a social conscience. As I said earlier on, the Belvedere Pass pupils, the Sedalists in Garner Street, and the VEC saw a need to establish recreational and personal development centres, which is basically what boys' clubs were. So they give the boys of the inner city opportunity to come in a few nights a week, have recreation, have personal training, personal development, develop whatever skills they might have and be taught new skills. By and large, most of the boys from these clubs went on to contribute not just in small way in their own communities, but in certain cases in national and from a national point of view, from even to the extent of politics, business, religion and community involvement.
One of the abiding features of club life was the involvement of local families. Joe recalls the families involved in his club.
Well, one of the amazing features of our boys' club was that the numbers of families, I mean families, the founders, for instance, had a family called the Proctors, And there was my old man, Michael Proctor, and his two sons were involved in the setting up of the St. Francis Xavier Boys Club. Later on, as you move into the membership, for instance, there was another family called the Coxes, Michael and Christy Cox, and we will be hearing from Christy Cox's nephew in the later on the programme, Pat Egan. If you go down through the list of families, not alone was the families involved in the boys, but over the years, the parents became involved through getting involved in the parents' committee. And by and large, while it was predominantly the mothers got involved, there was a few fathers who were able to give a dig out as required. But if you go through the list of the membership of the clubs over the years, once one member of a family got in, you can be guaranteed that it became a family affair. And there's every young brother that got in, or any older brother that got in, the younger brothers followed suit. And the club was blessed with that type of tradition, that it became a family club. Where it was located was, it enabled it to have this type of small, close-knit community base, which covered from Mountjoy Prison, Ignatius Road, in this Fallon Parade block of houses, across into Dorset Street, into the old, what's now De Valera Place. It used to be old Dorset Lane, Dorset Row. Coming down towards Belvedere Road, down to Sherrod Street Lower, Sherrod Street Upper, Upper Garner Street, spreading its wings down into Jones's Road area, Clonliffe Gardens, even down as far as Summerhill and Richmond Street and Charlotte Street. So that little block was the nub of the membership. And the little block actually was blocks of families, and they all became synonymous with St. Francis Xavier's Boys Club, but none more so than the longest serving active founder leader at the of the club would have been Michael Proctor Jr.
I'm Father Flanagan. I saw your brother Joe just a little while ago. We had a long talk about you, Whitey. Joe wants you to come to Boys Town with me. If you think you're going to make a plough jockey out of me, you got another thing coming.
We'll hear more from Joe later in the programme. Shawnee Lamb is a community activist. He's the chairperson of the Inner City Organisations Network and has been involved in the development of the area for many years and sits on a number of boards. He's currently the director of the Inner City Renewal Group. Shawnee is also a former member of the St. Francis Xavier Boys Club. I met him for a coffee in a hotel on Eamon Street, just around the corner from where he grew up in the 1950s, and he told me how and when he joined the Boys Club.
Well, certainly it was in the late 50s. I think my own memory of it would have been I was around 9 or 10, so that would make it around 58. I remember I was going for a short while before I got some kind of status, and the first status I got was probationer. And I think there was a difference between the probationers. I think we could only go one night a week, whereas the rest of the club you went two nights a week. But I quickly moved on into that. I heard about the club from cousins of mine who were in it, the McCarthys. Yeah, we all lived in Dorset Avenue, just off Dorset Street there, facing the silk mills, where the new housing complex is now, De Valera Place as they call it. So that's where we were all from, and it was great. We had been involved, a couple of us had been involved in the stamp guild in the church, and you'd go over there and you'd take the stamps off envelopes. Danny Fitzpatrick was in charge of it at the time, and I think that could have been an introduction to the club as well. So I went there, and certainly I know I went on at least two summer holidays to Lona Murphy House in Salins, and I also went on one holiday to a place down in Rattangan. So that would mean that I was in the club for at least 3 years, and possibly four. Well, my favourite was the billiards. We had a what would now be called a snooker table, but we only played billiards on it, and it was in a room at the top of the house. And that was terrific because nothing else went on there except billiards. But we also had other things. I learned to play table tennis as well. We had table tennis. We had drafts, other board games. We used to play shove penny. That was great crack, almighty crack altogether. think there was a very small library as well. You could get books. And I remember, certainly, I remember some of the leaders pretty well. And I remember Mick Proctor and then Eddie Powers, the tall lad, yeah. And then there was Paul Goodson's brother, Pat. And there was a chap there we used to call Maxie McCann. The Maxie McCann we all knew, of course, was the Great Rovers footballer. And because his name happened to be McCann, I think he was also nicknamed Maxie. I got to know the original Maxie McCann later and still know him. He lives up in Summer Hill there, up in Langridge Place. Oh, yeah, they were great years. And then that one of the priests who came in as chaplain decided to set up classes to learn the Mass, the Latin Mass, and two or three of us did that, and then eventually I ended up serving Mass, although I was never a part of the altar boys, but I used to serve Mass in Gardiner Street, either in the long hall to the old priests where there'd be nobody there, or in the side chapels. I served Mass a couple of times. I used to go down to the little shop down where Mother's Pride is and collect the cakes down and bring up these cream cakes. I don't remember Father Sweetman from that time. I subsequently got to know him afterwards. He became very much a social activist dealing with homeless young people. And I got to know him, and he officiated at my father's funeral as well. Oh, he would have been, yeah, because when we left Dorset Street, we moved to Mountjoy Square when they were knocking down the houses in Dorset Street. And we got my mother and father became caretakers of a building owned by the Legion of Mary in Mountjoy Square, 28 Mountjoy Square, and we lived there for a good few years until it was at the top of the hill, so until my parents could no longer get up the stairs, really, we lived there. I was quite religious, and religion was part, particularly with Mick Proctor, sorry. But at some stage, I can't remember the details of why or how, but I joined the Legion of Mary, which was based on Buckingham Street. And believe it or not, I became at that stage the youngest ever presidium secretary in the Legion of Mary. I was a secretary of an intermediate presidium, and I think I wouldn't have been any more than 13 at that time. And having to give an annual report down at Dolorose, a house in Dominic Street. And, of course, we would occasionally be brought on visits to Clongowes, one-day trips. And that had a big influence on me. And then there was one young priest, a Jesuit, we used to call him Brother O'Neill, a really great guy. Yeah. And he influenced me a lot. And I was wondering at that stage, as I suppose a lot of young people would have, young men looking at a religious vocation. I didn't pursue it, and there were a number of rather weird reasons why. One of them was it was quite clear that the Jesuits weren't interested in young fellows like us in becoming Jesuits, that's for sure. So they put me off, go to the Oblates kind of thing, you know. Also, my father, I wanted to go to Cloche de Wirra. I was in St. Mary's Place, but I went to the Gaeltacht in Connemara, won a Galen scholarship, and I was down there for 3 months, and when I came back, and my Irish would have been as close to fluent now as you're likely to get, so I wanted to continue my secondary education. Now, you had to pay for secondary education at the time, but as you know, my father was a grafter, and he would walk until he got the money, if that's what we wanted or that's what we needed, you know. But we found that when we went down to Sussex making the transfer into Cloche de Wirra, that they weren't particularly, they didn't want poor young fellas in there either. And the combination of those two things kind of not only radicalised me in a way. And the other thing was, my role in the Legion of Mary, on Thursday nights I used to go around telling the old people that the priests would be coming. With communion the following morning, so they had to fast all night. pretty hardy places, you know, down in Garner Street and Sean McDermott Street, in the old tenements, you know, and in the dark, and a lot of the lights would be broke and all sorts of things, you know. I used to walk to a priest down in Sean McDermott, down Killarney Street, called Father Drummy, lovely man. So he bought me a big torch to go up and down the tenement houses and all. And I also used to bring the kids to Mass on a Sunday morning. So we'd go down in Corporation Building, see, knocking at the doors, anybody want kids brought to Mass? And we'd bring the kids over to Mass in what was then the new church in John McDermott Street. But between the jigs and the reels, shortly after that, I became a little bit disillusioned, particularly the amount of poverty I was seeing. And, I mean, we regarded ourselves as poor. I can assure you we were rich compared to the people I was going to, you know. So I started thinking a bit more about things, and I started reading up more. And by the time I was 15, I was a rip-roaring atheist, I can tell you. But that was my first connection with that Sean McDermott Street, Gardner Street area. And when, after 17 years working in independent newspapers, I had become active in the local community with people like Tony Gregory and Fergus McKay, Mick Rafferty. So I left the Indo and I went to Trinity. And then I only ever wanted to be involved in that area, in working to make things better for people than they were. I've more or less done that with my life since the early 80s, if you like, and for the past, since around 93, I've been director of the Inner City Renewal Group, which is a community development project originally funded by the Combat Poverty Agency and the Department of Social Welfare. And when I started on that, it was myself and two part-time people. And up to Christmas just gone out, we had 12 people working in the project. That's now been affected by government cutbacks and government policy. However, I would certainly wouldn't hesitate in saying that my interest in that area of work emanated, if you like, through a natural process of progression. A lot of that was stimulated in the club, not only on the religious side of the things, but the idea of organising activities, the need for structured services for young people. Although I wouldn't have articulated it that way then, of course I can see the logic of it now. And the clubs were great.
I'd like to tell you that we're going to do a sad song for you. This song here is one of the saddest songs we've ever heard. You ain't nothing going to do.
Another member of the St. Francis Xavier Boys Club is the well-known concert promoter Pat Egan. And Pat told me about his early days living at the back of the Mater Hospital and how he became a member of the Boys Club.
Well, I lived in Eccles Place, which was just off Dorset Street, across the road from St. Francis Xavier's Church. My father had gone away very young during the war, and he never came back. So we spent an awful lot of time with my mother's family, who one of them was one of my uncles, Christy Cox. He was involved with some of the boys' club, the lads, Mick Proctor and various other people there, Joe, Danny Fitz and those. So I think he was involved in, they founded the club or whatever, he had some involvement in the foundation of it or whatever. So just as when I was around 11, 12, that kind of time, it was... my mother was glad to kind of get me off the street, and so I was brought over to join the club. I think my brother actually came with me, but he didn't, he said he never felt at home in the club or whatever. It didn't fit in with his personality or whatever.
Can you remember what year that might have been?
Well, it would have been about 1958. I would have been about 12. And in those days, there wasn't a lot to do in the sense that you played football on the streets. You were, you know, put out of the house and you ran around the streets till 9 o'clock till you were called in, that kind of thing. You might go to the bow or the drummer on a Sunday if you could get four p together. So going over to the club for me I was a bit more, you know, Jim, my brother, would stay in kind of reading and stuff like that. I was always more out on the corner and, you know, out in the street a lot. So going over to the club was, you know, I don't think I can remember thinking about it initially. I just brought over and I found that I enjoyed it. It was interesting and there was lots to do there and there were lots of fellas there or whatever. So it has long term, but it's had a huge influence on my kind of upbringing and the time that I look back with great fondness on the time that I spent there. You know, I was part of the table tennis team. I used to play football, but I never actually played any football for St. Francis Xavier's, but they had a good couple of good football teams. I was no good at the snooker and stuff or whatever, but the overall, there was a sense of family to the place, and that was hugely important, because our family was a bit disjointed in the sense that I used to spend an awful lot of time in my grandmother's house because my mother went out to work. She lived across the road in Leo Street. I lived in Eccles Place, back of the hospital, back of the Manor Hospital, and she lived across the road, so I spent a lot of time there. But the club gave me a sense of belonging, I suppose, and I loved it, basically. We went down the country a couple of times, down to not Clongowes, Lon and Murphy House, was it? Yeah. And they were great. That was the first holidays I think I'd ever been on in my life, because I'd never been out of Dorset Street other than that. So those weekends, I think we went down on a Friday night and came back on a Sunday or something, that kind of thing. And I remember the big breakfast being cooked in the place. I never saw so many sausages in my life. And that kind of, you know, great fun. I hated the walks, but they used to take you for these long walks, which would be fucking 3 or 4 miles. But overall, and throughout my life, as things have gone on and whatever, as you grow up and you have your family and all, the club was always a kind of an anchor to me, even though I wasn't involved anymore. It was a place that I felt that I got a great sense of how enjoyable life kind of could be if you were with the right people and doing the right things and all like that. You never think you're going to get to be 60 or whatever it is, but it's never gone away, the love of the place. I did start writing a music column for a Spotlight magazine later on, which was a big show band thing at the time. The other thing I remember best about the club that I enjoyed was the jumping, the sports. They used to have a sports day down at the back of Croke Park. That stood out a lot for me as well. I remember there was races, you know, 60 yards and all that kind of thing, which I enjoyed too, because you never had that sense of being part of a kind of a group of people that you had a close affinity and association with. So all those things were, as I said, were very dominant. Even now, you know, the people that I'm with now or whatever, my daughter and my sons and people, I'd still tell them about it and what it was like. Of course, they have no real understanding nowadays of what it was like in those days, where you didn't have any money and you didn't have any trainers to run in and you didn't have any of that stuff. But it's been a great, it's a terrible pity that there's not an awful lot more of them now, I suppose, to take young fellas off the streets and things. It's just that they're just not attractive anymore. There's no, you know, they're probably not fast moving enough for the kids today.
I was getting a sense that there was a hive of activity in the north inner city, and the boys' club was at the hub. My dad's Joe again, talking about his own club and others in his community.
Francis Xavier's Boys Club was started initially in October 43, when they secured the premises at 7 Upper Sherard Street, which would be the back door to Garner Street Church.
Many people probably remember the old St. Francis Xavier Hall. It was opposite that.
Exactly, yeah. But the Francis Xavier Hall was the focal. It was the original community centre for that part of inner city Dublin. It was the only place other than a conventional dance hall on the Parnell Square side of the Liffey, where you would have shows, for instance, like the annual pantomime, and then in the later years you'd have dance bands being played there, and bingo subsequently, and film shows. In the original hall, which was a tin roofed hall, we would go on maybe at a weekend, a Sunday or a Saturday, to a picture show. So that's how Francis Xavier's Boys Club was founded. It was formed in 1943. They started setting up the house. It was a 3-storey over basement. They had a back a unit at the back, which would be a kind of a lean-to garage, which became the boxing gym. And it started with a group of men who were asked to volunteer. They were sodalists, members of the men's sodality in Gardiner Street Church. The director of the sodality at the time, Charles Maloney, SGA, looked for volunteers, and he got quite a number of young men, as they were then, to row in and start this club. And if we can give you an idea of how they were trying to start the club, in October 43, they purchased a bagatelle table for 10 shillings. They got a nameplate for the wall of the club in December from Gunnings for £1.18. And they got a billiard table for 10 shillings as well.
You're reading this out of a history that you've done over the years of the club.
Well, the early history of the club, it was something that was started, and I only got as far as probably 1959, well, roughly 59. And it's a potpourri. It's a potpourri taken from all the minutes books.
Right.
Where they, in actually 1955, and it's from all the minutes books that are able to show what type of club they were, how it started off, what they needed to do to get it up and running, how they managed to get the members in, the first group of members, it might have been about 20 or 30 members, where they came from, and the progress that the club made in the initial 10 years, we'll say. Because I actually came into that club in 1952 when I was a 11-year-old. But prior to that, you had to be between 12 and 14 to join. So they dropped the age limit to a lower limit around the early 50s.
Do you think that was due to demand?
It was due to the fact that we weren't the only club on the block, you might say. As I mentioned, we had the Belvedere, we had the Brewerra. We had the Stella Maris Club around in North Charles Street, another boys' club, again founded by a different organisation, the Legion of Mary. A well-known leader at the time who was involved with that club was Harry Levins, who was very well, much liked around the Charles Street area, because most of the leaders actually lived in the area of the club. Other clubs in the area that developed later on, I know at one stage, if you counted the number of clubs in a block, we'd say 1 mile, less than 1 mile, or a quarter of a mile from Pro Cathedral, there were 14 clubs operating within that distance. Further down, for instance, in Seville Place, you had the O'Connell Boys Club, again founded by the past pupil of the O'Connell Schools. You had clubs like, for instance, in East Wall, St. Mary's the East Wall, a well-established club operating in the East Wall area. But on the other side of the Liffey, there were quite a number of clubs as well. So I can't speak for the how they developed or how early they developed. But from the north side point of view, St. Saviour's, which is a well-known boxing club down in Dorset Street, you had another club formed in Gardiner Street, which you might hear more about later on, Lower Gardiner Street, down at the Talbot Street end. Another Brew Larkin, which was developed by the VEC under the umbrella of the Corle de la Soiga. There was another club called St. Anthony's in Nelson Street, this time formed by the VDP. There were loads of different organisations who were prepared to get involved in running boys' club services.
Thanks to Joe, Pat and Shawnee for taking part in this first programme in the Boys' Club series. In the next programme, we'll talk to many of the boys from the Belvedere Youth Club, which was founded in 1918, about their memories of the Newsboys and the development of the Boys' Club. The programme was produced and edited by me, Dave O'Connor.
This programme was made with the support of Sound and Vision, Broadcasting Funding Scheme, a BCI initiative.